Today, a dose of reality with Tony Lacandro. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. I'm joined today by Tony Lacandro. Hi, Tony. How are you going?
Going quite well, Martin. New location. I'm actually up at Rolleystone house sitting. So yeah, a nice backdrop and a couple of dogs to keep me company. So yeah, all good.
Excellent. Yeah, I've got a couple of dogs here who are actually keeping me company at the moment, having taken them out for a walk this morning, and it's definitely part of the furniture.
yeah. So. Oh, look, it's been a while since we've spoken, and I just think that the situation in Australia is looking a lot more precarious now. And despite the fact that interest rates, you know, we're at 4.1, there's debate as to where we're going to go from here. Strong recovery, though, in house prices in June, though. I think Sydney was up 1.7, so there has been quite a bit of a bounce, but I don't think that's giving a true reflection, Martin, of where the market's heading.
No, it is interesting, actually. The information that came out this week, so we had inflation information and we had retail sales information, and it's interesting how the mainstream media actually played up the good news, but actually they didn't do much analysis of the data. And when you actually peel it back, so for example, retail sales were a little bit stronger, but the main reason it was stronger was because we got a bigger population and the cost of goods have gone up. So the absolute number was a lot lower. And with regard to the other data set, you know, whilst the headline inflation came down a little, the core inflation hardly moved at all. So I'm seeing let's call it a campaign to try and convince people that everything in the garden is lovely. And home prices is another example. Sure, well, you know, on average, on aggregate, there might be a move up, but I can show you many areas where property prices are still drifting considerably faster in the other direction. And so again, there seems to me to be a false view of what's really going on, while the underlying issues and higher interest rates and those sorts of things and the cost of living pressures clearly are building. And of course, there's a new issue here with the cost of particularly gas and electricity now rising, not so much in Western Australia, but down the East Coast, and a lot of other cost increases coming through from 1 July.
Well, they're talking 20 to 25%. So we are still affected in WA with the RAC coming and saying, look, home insurance and car insurance up 20%. So you throw in the costs of energy, and you throw in insurance costs and just general living. And, you know, I feel that Australians are slowly being sandpapered to death, and it's only going to get worse because we're looking at the mortgage cliff. Some commentators are saying, look, it's not going to happen. But people don't understand that markets don't fall like stock markets. There's low stock, and these settlements are going to take time. And a lot of houses are going to stay on the market. So once sellers meet the bid, then we're going to start to see the real pressure on it. And the sad part is that rates are, well, they're not normal yet. They've got to get to 6% before they're normal. But let's be honest. Low, everyone hates him. They talk about how he should lose his job and, you know, sack the RBA. But we're still 1.4% behind New Zealand, and we're behind the US, and we're behind Canada. And I think the issue here is his bedside manner. It's terrible. He just, the way his facial expressions, you remember when he walked up onto the podium to Justin Timberlake's song? He had nothing to do with that. And you certainly wouldn't want him to be the bearer of bad news. And I think that's just his mannerisms. But historically, and in comparison to the rest of the world, our interest rates are still low.
No, spot on, Tony. And interestingly, of course, over in Europe, there were four central bankers being interviewed a couple of days ago in Portugal. And so we had Andrew Bailey from the Bank of England. We had Christine Lagarde in the Eurozone. We had, you know, Mr. Powell from the US, and we had the new governor from Japan. And it was really interesting how all of them had a very strong, similar message, which is inflation hasn't been beat yet. Rates are going to have to stay higher for longer. And, you know, whilst Japan is in a slightly different situation, even they were saying, well, they might see inflation come down, but then go up again. So anybody who thinks that magically we're suddenly going to start to see interest rates drop over the next few months. And there are still people in the property sector writing this in Australia now, you know, that, well, it's a great time to buy because prices, you know, have come back a bit and rates look down, so buy now. The truth of the matter is rates are going to stay higher for longer. They'll probably never, ever go back to the 0.1% we had unless we get a massive major financial crisis internationally, which is possible, but not necessarily my main case. So rates are going to stay higher for longer. And, you know, Lowe, I agree, has a very bad bedside manner, but he is basically following the same playbook. And I look across to New Zealand because I think New Zealand is probably further down the curve in terms of trying to tackle this stuff, but they're much more transparent there than in Australia. But I just don't understand why it is that so many people in the Australian context are still arguing effectively that, you know, rates don't need to go up higher and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. For me, one of the other interesting observations is people need to understand lifting interest rates is a deliberate strategy by the banks to create a slowing economy. They want to see a slowing economy. They need to, because a slowing economy is required, in their view, to translate into controlling inflation. So it's not like it's an accident, you know, the momentum slowing. It's a deliberate design of the strategy. And it's like, I don't think people get it in Australia yet. You know, this is actually an engineered slowdown. It's deliberate. And not everybody's equally impacted, of course, but anybody with a big mortgage, anyone who bought recently, is going to have an issue. And of course, CoreLogic's Pain and Gain report showed that, in fact, there's been a rise in those selling property more recently, particularly if they bought and then had to sell at a loss. So we're starting to see the early signs now of forced sales, while the delinquency rates are also rising if you look at the most recent data there. So to my mind, you know, your sandpaper is getting more and more coarse.
Oh, of course it is. And I saw a story where, Perth residents selling at a loss. You've got massive weakness and issues with people in the Keystart loans as well. And what we're seeing now is prices have been priced for absolute perfection for permanently low interest rates. And what is hard for many policymakers and commentators to grasp is that they've dealt with the biggest debt-fueled asset bubble of our generation, and it's not going to take textbook methods to solve it. And you can't have 6 to 7% mortgages and price to income ratios a 13, 14 times. It just doesn't happen when 5 or 6 is still nosebleed. And I just think that this hasn't even started yet, the amount of pain. I mean, I look at personally, Martin, I've completely cut out alcohol this year. I've cut out takeaway coffees. I don't bother with them anymore. We rarely dine out. I'm looking at ways to cut costs because in being a advisor in small cap stocks, I've been sandpapered to death for the last 18 months and I know what it feels like, and it hasn't been easy. But I have the benefit where a little uptick in my stocks and then suddenly it's going back on. But people in these salary positions where they can't really earn a lot more are in financial dire straits. So I think the forced sales are yet to come. And a lot of those in the markets I'm in, we've had 18 months of pain due to piss poor sentiment. Companies haven't been able to raise money, but there is interest at a lot lower levels. And a lot of these stocks can halve and then some. But what happens when property investors get the shits and they all start to sell? That's the concern.
Yeah, no, property investors, I think it's a really interesting. In my surveys, Tony, I'm seeing a lot of property investors who have decided to try and cut their losses. So we're seeing more old investment properties listing at the moment. And certainly in my surveys, whilst the argument is that they've been able to put their rents up somewhat, there's a ceiling to you know, how high they can move rents up relative to the significantly higher costs of mortgages, particularly in the investment sector. So quite a few people are now saying, well, maybe, you know, I should get out of investment property. And then, of course, the question is, well, if they come out of investment property and they've got, you know, some equity floating around the place, well, what are the other options? Because, of course, you can get, what, 5% now on term deposits without even trying, right? And, you know, if you look at other asset classes, bonds and things, you know, there are many other different stories now which probably have lower risk profiles, more liquidity, and less potential downside relative to property. So I'm calling, and I've called it for a little while, but I'm calling, you know, the end of the property super cycle in Australia, despite higher migration, despite all the government policies to try and support the industry, you know, things like the affordable housing stuff, which basically what they're going to do is use money, public money, to buy mostly units that actually have already been built but haven't been sold, to try and give builders a bit of a wriggle room. But this is actually supporting supporting builders rather than helping households. So I'm calling the end of the property super cycle at the moment, and I think the next 2 or 3 years are going to be really, really uncomfortable for a good number of people.
I think if we look at it, prior to that surprise election result, in, say, 2019, the market was on a steady downward trajectory and prices were somewhat normalising. Then we had that election and 4 years, give or take, of COVID. So this financial lunacy has been extended by a global pandemic, and that goes through to property. It goes through to buy now, pay later. It goes through to rampant consumerism, which I think is going to come to an end. And it's going to be that 70s show again, where we get back to basics and we look at consumerism and say, what the hell did I need to buy that for? Why did I need to go do all that shopping? Why did I need that flash car to impress people? It's ridiculous. We just had so much cheap money that we thought that buying stuff would certainly give us that dopamine hit, but that's the same as cocaine, sugar, and porn, Martin. And what happens when you're trying to get out of these things? I just think, you know, you look at used car prices will come off. You look at treadmills on Gumtree, chest freezers. It's all going to come off. And the time to have garage sales, unfortunately, was before everyone else. So I think that we're going to have a massive decay in Australia. We've already seen some of the stupidity here in Perth. There was a story on teenage BMX bandit gangs in balaclavas terrorising motorists in Ellenbrook. And they said they're going to spread to Joondalup. And Ellenbrook's a high youth crime area and a mortgage prison. So now, you know, you think window washers and beggars at intersections concern you, well, it's going to get a whole lot worse, Martin. And there's no easy reset out of this. Unfortunately, families are going to have to declare personal bankruptcy, because there's no way, once things start to unwind, we're going to get back to 2% mortgages and 13 to 14 times price to income in Sydney, not without, you know, a major increase in crime, people giving up basic health services to try and survive. It's just going to be an absolute shit show. And it's just that cheap money and, to an extent, COVID have extended the runway.
Absolutely. And of course, through COVID, central banks dropped rates to ultra low levels. And, you know, liquidity was created both through quantitative easing and also through government stimulus. And in fact, my argument, Tony, is that the inflation seed was planted through that cycle. So effectively, whilst you can blame Ukraine and you can blame energy and those other things, the real seed was the liquidity flow that went into the market over the last 2 or 3 years. Now, if you look carefully about money supply is now reversing. So if you want a leading indicator of the problems ahead, money supply gives you probably the better forward indicator, right? And the problem that I think we've got is that there's still a disconnect between people's perception of what's really going on and reality, because for many people, they haven't yet been hit personally. So if I look at my surveys, you know, we've got about half of the people with mortgages already up against it. So about 46% of people in mortgage stress. But a lot of other people are saying, well, you know, I've got a small mortgage and I've got a good income. I'm not really seeing it yet. And, you know, there are other people who've got quite good returns from deposits and from stocks and shares recently. So there's still a proportion of people who haven't really understood what's really going on more broadly. But if you look at bankruptcies, for example, in the building and construction sector, never been higher than we've seen now. If you look at some of the retail sectors, particularly some of the small shops, they're already struggling. So, you know, as soon as you start peeling back the onion, what you realize is that actually there is a lot of pain already sitting around. I don't know whether you saw the recent ABS statistics show that more households than ever before are now working multiple jobs to try and generate a bit more income to get by. So you can see the early signs, and I reckon this is going to take about a year or maybe two to play out, but I don't think that there's going to be a nice easy exit. I think we've built ourselves this huge problem, and unfortunately for many people, the property market is going to be caught right in the crossfire. And you know, you're right, I think some people will be forced to sell. Now the banks will try and extend and pretend they are already, so you know they're using a 1% buffer than a 3% buffer, which is what APRA recommended. And some people are actually extending the life of the loan so that they end up paying a lot more interest over a longer period of time, as though that somehow magically solves the problem, but it probably won't be enough anyway. So there is a big extend and pretend here. And I have to tell you that I think many in the mainstream media are not actually telling the full, honest, open story here. And you know, the analogy of sandpaper to death is not a good one, but it's actually the truth, because it goes on and on and on, month after month after month. And so, you know, people can probably handle a month or two, but when it's 6 months later and 12 months later, and they're still struggling with cash flow, people are going to have to take bigger, harder decisions. And I agree with you that in many cases, the early alleviation strategies that you could have done a few months ago are now past it. So you haven't got many options in many cases, I think.
Oh, certainly not. And I guess every house is different. You know, I'm still seeing $3.5 million houses in Strathfield on, you know, a few hundred square meter blocks. So there are still ridiculous pockets of the market as well. But what I've found is that when my income, obviously in my industry, slowed up considerably, and even though I've got shares, I'm looking at ways of cutting costs, looking at my mortgage. My mortgage cliff is 3.5 years away. You know, there's always an apprehension to go to the dentist, Martin. I actually went to the dentist a few weeks ago for the first time in 5 years, and he said to me, your teeth are actually pretty good. I've just got to do a few fillings. And I thought, oh, thank Christ for that. I thought I'd be up for thousands of dollars, but luckily I've maintained my private health insurance. So, you know, very rare you go to the dentist to get good news. But can you imagine living through the pain, constant pain of a toothache? Can you imagine the constant pain of financial stress? There's no worse stress, because it leads to alcoholism, it leads to gambling, it leads to domestic violence. I know. I mean, I can feel it. I know what's coming, and I know. But the pundits will say, "Oh, yeah, but you guys have been talking about this for years." Yes, but having what's coming isn't going to be good for anyone, and even the ultra rich are going to be affected, because as soon as they get out of their comfort zone, they're going to be faced with all these social issues. So I think, yeah, it's certainly going to happen to us, and it's only a matter of time before once you see some negative sentiment in hideously overpriced assets, then all bets are off. And I've seen that for the last 18 months in my job, where some of my companies now are almost trading below what the money in the bank. And that's what happens when the sentiment tap is stopped. And it's going to happen to every other asset class. So unfortunately, it's going to happen to property, which we're sentimental about, and people fear losing. There's always the argument, well, the kids need their own room, I'm not going to buy bunk beds. So, and I think with high interest rates where they are, hundreds of thousands to come off 2% straight onto 6%, good luck finding an extra 30, 40 grand a year. Because let's be honest, you can slave your guts driving Uber. Look at the personal wear and tear, the wear and tear on the car, and you're probably pulling 10 bucks an hour. So, I mean, every other second job is, yeah, it's saturated. OnlyFans is saturated. Going on Married at First Sight to become an internet star is saturated. All the jobs that Australians don't want to do are taken, because people get in there and work, and those from other countries will happily have three jobs to live the bloody dream. So I think we're not only going to see financial Armageddon, but social Armageddon.
Yeah, Tony, I think that's a very important point. And I've been saying for some time that, you know, the financial stress translates into societal issues. And, you know, that includes things like crime, but also, you know, violence and those things. And frankly, relationship breakdown as well. And, you know, all of those things can compound. And what I find quite interesting in my surveys is that one of the themes that comes through is that people, you know that they've got some financial pressures, but they prefer just to look the other way and say, oh, you know, it'll probably be all right, she'll be right. Because the consequences of tackling and facing up to those pressures lead to a lot of societal implications. You know, I've got to pull the kids out of school, I've got to stop school fees, I can't afford to get my dental treatment anymore. And so there's a lot of real important things here. And the other point I'd make is that, of course, we've got very high migration at the moment, massive amounts, you know, 700,000 over 2 years. A lot of those migrants are coming in to do the jobs that, quote, people in Australia don't want to do, which I find a little bit surprising and a little concerning. To my mind, what the government has done is turn up all of the levers they can, you know, migration, extra support for the building construction sector, all of those things, to try and stop the disaster that's actually, you know, ahead. I don't think it'll be successful, by the way, but it will create significant issues and social issues. I think the other point, Tony, is I get a lot of people say, well, you know, you're talking East Coast. You know, East Coast is where all this is going to happen, but Perth is west is fine. We haven't got the same power pressures. We haven't had the same stupidity in property prices. There's still plenty of employment. So I guess one question for you is, do you think Western Australia is as, you know, in the crosshairs as down the East Coast, or are there special circumstances over Perth way?
Oh, I don't think we're special by any stretch, but I do look at realestate.com, and I've noticed that within about 10 kilometres of the CBD, nothing's really lasting for sale at the moment. And I read articles on East Coast investors buying without even seeing these houses. So, I mean, I look at, if I had to buy again, and I'd look at, you know, we've got such great suburbs that are up and comers that do have some riffraff, do have some issues to sort out, but that's where you get your growth. But you could live somewhere like Nollamara. I mean, I talk about Nollamara quite a bit because the other suburbs I mentioned in earlier interviews have already gone through the roof. but you can live within 10 kilometres of everything for $400,000. So probably less mortgage pressure on a lot with lower mortgages, but we still have those mortgage corridors. We're seeing a lot of growth in places such as Baldivis, Mandurah, and to the north. So I can't see us escaping the shitstorm ahead. But the way I see it is that there's always a chance that the money could, instead of flowing to Hobart, which it did last time, and then we saw the stupid increase in Adelaide house prices, maybe Perth could become a more steadier market with some speculative upside. And I guess that's always on the cards, Martin. But looking at the social issues, looking at the cost of living pressures, we're not immune to it. Admittedly, McGowan, before he left, gave us some electricity bill relief. But all other cost of living pressures, we're certainly paying for it. But, maybe we might be a little bit of a safe haven in the end.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I mean, I do think there are some differences in the West. And in my surveys, what I found, actually, that mortgage stress is building again. But actually, a lot of the mortgage stress was actually from 2014 and 15 onwards. So it's actually longer, generationally speaking, than the 2019-2021 cohorts, which is what I'm seeing down the East Coast. So I think there are some differences there. And I guess, just standing back slightly and thinking about the broader markets, interesting, of course, that the US markets have been quite strong, but they're being driven by a very narrow swathe of stocks, specifically in the AI sector. And if you look at the broader indices and strip out the few stocks that are actually, I think, like 26% of the market movement, but actually well over 100% of the growth, if you look at the other stocks, they're going backwards. So I'm not even sure that financial markets are actually looking that flash either at the moment, despite the fact that the indices are pretty high, because the AI thing has a significant resonance to me to the dot-com boom.
Absolutely. And I see it. I look at the Dow Jones. I look at the S&P 500, and they've been resilient. But you hit it spot on, Martin. There's only been a small number of tech companies. I think this artificial intelligence craze will pass. I know I go to ChatGPT and I ask for a 7-day workout program using machine weights only, and it wrote a brilliant program. It writes essays. I actually got ChatGPT to write my partner a poem, and she actually cried. So it certainly has some benefits, but look at all the failures of machines trying to control stock markets and banks going under. And sure, a lot of industries are going to see major job losses. But again, will it become as big as the internet? No, but there is a place for it, and it has driven stocks. And that's the bubble that we're seeing. And in Australia, our major stocks, bank stocks, have been fairly flat. They have recovered somewhat. Discretionary retail has been poleaxed. You look at Adairs, Manchester, you look at JB Hi-Fi, you look at the punishment afforded to Domino's. Lovisa, the costume jewellery mob, they're just hanging on for grim death as well. So discretionary retail, absolute gonskis. And you're right, the indices are distorting the true rot in financial markets. And I know that, there was a time today I sat at this desk with my head in my hands, and Juliana said to me, "I've never seen you look like that." And I said, "Well, I just want to see an end to probably the most challenging financial year in my 24 and a half year career. It's just been an absolute shit show. I've just had, we've had a few setbacks along the way, but I actually had breakfast with a client who's been with me every day, 24 and a half years. And we came to the conclusion that out of 24 years, 8 of them were disastrous. So investors need to know that those in small cap stocks, that most of the time things are pretty good, but we've just had 18 months of it. And sadly, it's going to hit the general population who have had the misguided belief that we're at a new paradigm, a new plateau of permanently high house and asset prices. And I remember some guy said that in 1929 about the stock market. So we have a greatly inexperienced population who've had a charmed ride since the last recession, being able to binge, borrow, buy lots of toys, upgrade, try and get a water view, outdo each other. And now it's all about to turn to shit. And it could even really accelerate once we start to see prices taper off.
Yeah, absolutely. And these things are a bit of a slow burn. It takes a bit of time, you know, and I'm sure the government will throw more stuff at it. And, you know, there'll be other attempts to prop it up. But I personally think we're towards the end of that prop up road. And the extend and pretend can't go on forever. There's going to be a point when you know, things start to really capitulate. And what's interesting, of course, you made the point earlier on about sentiment, right? So sentiment is a critical thing to understand. Whilst there are fundamentals in the market, and you know, you can talk about valuations and PE ratios, actually sentiment is the critical thing. And I'm fascinated by the way that the markets have completely disconnected themselves from what the central bankers were saying about we need to put rates up to be able to get inflation. Inflation has been stickier there for longer. You know, the markets still haven't digested that. So to my mind, the market sentiment is, you know, in one place when reality is somewhere else. Now, when that starts to turn, as it probably will, that will be the next point of capitulation. And then I come back to, you know, individual households, particularly those in Australia, who are facing into more price rises as we come into July, who are facing into higher interest rates if they've got a mortgage, and a government that doesn't really have much ammunition because, of course, it can't stoke inflation more. So it's going to be doing stuff around the edge and at the margin. So I'm not sure there's any get out of jail card, which means that it's going to be a long, slow grind, and it's down to individual households to do what they can to protect and survive and to buttress their finances to get through. Certainly, if you've got the view that rates are going to drop back down to where they were over the next 6 months and that property prices are going to magically continue to rise, I mean, that to me is hope. That's not a strategy. And I think people do need to actually take a reality check, which, of course, is why I love talking to you, Tony, because you call it as it is. And yeah. I think we need to have people who actually, you know, wake up, smell the roses, see what's going on, and then start taking a bit of action to try and buttress their own situations.
So, most certainly. And people must say, Lecantro's down again. No, I had sentiment turn against me in biotech and gold. Australian gold price isn't far from a record high, yet gold juniors, you can buy them for $10 an ounce in the ground when they normally trade at 40 with record high gold prices. Sentiment in copper, base metals, gone. Some of these companies are trading towards cash backing with resources in the ground. It's ludicrous. And that's my example of sentiment. Whereas the hot stock, the hot cult sector, lithium, companies are capped at hundreds of millions of dollars and they're not going to produce anything at all. So that's what you get when you get that sector hype. And that spread to obviously AI. We had syringe bubbles, childcare bubbles, cow bubbles, farm bubbles, egg bubbles. You know, but that's what the hype, and once that gets sucked out, it's tough going. And I've just struggled through the last 18 months. But on the flip side, Martin, when the market turns and our companies are realized, my clients have got lots of stock, and that's where the war stories come out of. But I just can't see house prices in Sydney dropping 30 to 40% and recovering quickly. So That's the difference. And I'm just trying to reiterate that if it's normal growth, sustainable growth based on fundamentals, not an debt-filled speculative bubble, then that's okay. But this is a rare occasion where it's speculators, and speculators are going to do the damage to families trying to sell their house on the facing financial collapse. And I often mention two magic words. They're not Anacott Steel, it's price discovery. Real estate agents only need small evidence of lower price sales, and suddenly that suburb's 15 to 20% off. So yeah, we've got to stay real. I go through, I probably feel it more than anyone. I don't know, maybe I'm sensitive, but I'm just hoping that I can come out of my sandpaper period not selling too many of my shares, because, you know, I've seen my income, it's a lot lower. People don't want to sign up when everything's cheap. I mean, the stock market's the only store where people run out when everything's on sale.
Absolutely right. Yeah, that's a good point. And of course, sentiment tends to drive more people to run to the exits, and when in fact maybe the smart money had already left. And I'm fascinated by looking at what some of the smart investors have been doing, which is actually buttressing and preparing over the last few months relative to some of the speculators. Last conversation point before we stop. Did you see that Christopher Joy's come out and said he thinks there's going to be another movement down in property prices and delinquencies are going to rise, where you've got Kokoulis, arguing that inflation is conquered and, the Reserve Bank doesn't need to do any more. I'm fascinated by the dynamics of those two individuals.
It's actually awesome that I actually got to meet both within a few weeks of each other. So I met Kokoulis, closed a mining conference on the Gold Coast, and we caught up. Then he had to dash off. But they're both big personalities. But I think I'd be backing Chris Joy any day of the week. And you know, he's the master at selling bonds, buying bonds. I think you've got two differing opinions. But I think Stephen's full of hope, whereas Chris Joy gets back to the facts. And actually, when I met Chris, I thought that he was quite conservative with his downside calls. I think I'm a more savage bear than Chris, but he just makes a lot of sense. His financial articles are brilliant. Whereas I think Kokoulis on Twitter is still quite childish, and I've learnt through copying a lot of shit myself, you just got to ignore it and put people on mute. So yeah, very, very interesting. I guess we've all got our views, but I see this as being probably one of the greatest decaying of Australian society, more so than a junkie's teeth. But I will close in saying that my dentist said to me, you do produce a lot of saliva, so that's why your teeth haven't decayed. So maybe I've just got lucky on that one, Martin.
Well, there you go. A tip for the day, create more saliva. Tony, I really appreciate your time today. It's been a very, very interesting conversation, as always. I'll look forward to catching up with you again. Maybe we'll do a live show down the track. Have a great week and a great day. And hang in there. You know, who knows what's happening next, but I think adopt the brace position is probably a pretty good parting thought.
Absolutely. And I look forward to next time. And I'll be over in Bath in March next year. And hopefully you can give me a grand tour.
Absolutely. Look forward to it. Plenty of room here. You'll be able to see the studio and Bath itself. Great place to visit. So hopefully we'll catch up. See you later. Thanks, Tony. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thanks, Martin. Bye.